There's an important principle concerning the way in which our nation received the Torah at Sinai, in which the sages say all the souls of Israel, of all the generations, they all received the Torah at that time. That's from a deep spiritual angle. Nevertheless, each one of us have to receive the Torah anew every day, even though it's found deep in our awareness. I suppose we can compare this concept of the sages to some extent to the Jungian concept of deep archetypes that exist in the subconscious mind of human beings. When you say there's a national archetype, because archetypes work according to different groups of mankind, of the people of Israel, that in one way or another, in the power of the soul, which is really beyond normal dimensions of time, the people of Israel carry deep in the subconscious mind an awareness that we are the nation that has had the ability to hear God speak. The sages say, connected with this concept, that before birth, well, there's today also a lot of discussion concerning experiences which have been uncovered through regression therapy of past lives. Especially of interest is the view presented, amongst others, by the first one who popularized the concept of life after life. That's Dr. Moody, in important research, and the way in which he published side the research also of others, that the soul has experience of a life after life, and also the soul has experience of a life before life. And there are different theories how to explain this, but surely they're connected. And in some of his later books, as many others have done, they connect the two. Namely, the soul has an aspect of living in a dimension which is above time. And in this matter, there's a famous passage in the Gemara in Nida, page 30, where it says, before the baby is born, it's given the ability to have a knowledge of what goes on in the universe, from one end to the other of the universe. At the same time, the soul is also taught the whole Torah. It has knowledge of the Torah. And then, when the baby is about to come into this world, so the malach, the angel, it gives it a certain blow on its mouth, as a result of which the baby forgets everything from before. And the concept behind this is that he's thereby able to get back to his original stage, but now he has to get back to it in this world through the power of the freedom of the soul. He's got to work it himself. It's not given to him. He's got to work it out himself. I'll just tell you an episode which I experienced on my first visit to Eretz Israel. So I came by boat and made a great friendship with one of the leading Belze Hasidim. So soon after I arrived, I also went into the Belze Rov and intermingled with the Belze Hasidim. So they told me that there is a boy, very interesting boy, I think he was age 6 or 5, and this boy, if you'll say to him any verse in the Tanakh, or any statement of the sages, and you mention the first part of it, he will finish it off. He knows it all by heart, although he never learnt it. And I also asked him a few questions. This boy became the object of investigation, not only by many Jews, also many non-Jews, who were interested in investigating such phenomena. In fact, I think that there's research projects of many types that have tried to analyze how is it that very young children who never learnt a certain language, they seem to know it instinctively. There's someone who wrote a thesis book, in fact, it was a 4,000 examples that he had investigated of children who knew many things that they couldn't have learnt. So they knew it from experiences from before birth. And today it's become a common section of psychology. Some will still call it parapsychology, but the wider, more open minds amongst the psychologists call it true psychology or regression therapy, where they go back to pre-life experiences. And people know all sorts of things that they've never learned. Some people, they know Greek history, and they never studied it. They come out under hypnotism, under regression therapy, with enormous knowledge which can be verified to be true. So also, this boy, of course, is very interesting, because many years later, when he's back here in Eretz Yisrael, he was interviewed, this person, by that time he was in his 40s, he was interviewed what happened to him. So he said he went to cheder like everybody else, but he was such an unusual little boy, and people used to ask him questions, both friends and Jews and non-Jews who came along to investigate. And so the father took him to the Rebbe and said, what should he do? So the Rebbe told the boy, forget about it. Have nothing to do, don't answer any questions to anyone, because otherwise you can grow up to become crazy from it. And the age of 40 describes all this and says how much he thanks the Rebbe, because he's sure he would have become crazy as a result of the way in which people kept on questioning him. But in any case, this is just one example out of today, tens of thousands of investigations. And in fact, before a person is born, there are all sorts of things revealed to him. The soul, when it's not yet in part, in its major part, in this world, then it still experiences things which are beyond time and space. Just like the soul, when it's no longer so much in the body, as happens today when we have constant resuscitation of people who are more or less clinically dead, that also in those few minutes they experience things which span time and space. In any case, what's the concept behind it? It's that man, in fact, has the essence of him is the soul, which is the neshama, the breath of God, which brings him to a level, a prophetic level, beyond time and space. But in this world, the soul is covered over with a material awareness. And why is this so? Because in this life, a person's got to work things himself. So, the Midrash explains that this concept that a person's spirit is limited so that he will use his bechira, his power of choice, to choose to reach a high level of closeness to Hashem, this applies in this world. But in the future world, this will no longer apply. In future world, we will be given a high level. But how will we reach that future world? By fulfilling our task in this world. And the task in this world is that we can only reach this higher level by ourselves working very hard. It's the similar concept that we mentioned yesterday, that Hashem often gives enormous power from above, initially, but then he says, you've got to now work on the basis of your own power. It's Isarus de la Ela. In other words, here we have, in a way, the essence of the human soul as being something that comes entirely from above. But then Hashem throws us into a situation, we're put into a body, and in this body we have to work ourselves. We can't rely upon that. All right, we may have experiences, especially there may be, let's say, autistic children who have got a different part of their brain, works differently, so therefore in certain ways they're also given understanding of a certain power that is beyond time and space, certain circumstances. And certainly the prophets are also given a vision which is really beyond the physical level. But when we're at the physical level, which is the main task of a human being, we have to work through our own choice to work hard to reach the highest level. So that also applies to the nation of Israel. So Yetziat Mitzrayim, there we had to prepare ourselves to some extent to reach the Isarus del Eila, to reach the high level of influence that comes above of redemption. What was that effort which is required by us? It was to bring the Korban Pesach, because the redemption from Egypt was that Hashem jumped over Pesach, over the house of the people of Israel, in order that it would be able to come to the level of the revelation of the Divine Presence, to recognize that everything is in the hands of Hashem, that the Malach who came to destroy the Egyptian houses, it left out all the houses of the people of Israel, which had the Korban Pesach, so they saw this is a power from above. This doesn't come from ourselves. This is what Hashem is doing, that we should declare to the whole world, Ani v'lo Malach. If you look carefully in the Haggadah of Pesach, it hardly mentions the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. It describes the Makat Bukhorot, the culmination, the Esa Makot, of being a demonstration, Ani v'lo Malach. It comes from me, and not through any agent. This is the revelation of the Divine Presence, which is that which breaks the darkness and the hiddenness which human beings experience. Because generally in life we don't experience such closeness of Hashem in such a supernatural manner. So this is the concept of Isarus Le'ila, which applies to the concept of the positive redemption. But how can we break the darkness? That can only come through Darut Le'tata. We've got to do our part. In other words, we had to do our part to destroy the idol of the Egyptians, by bringing the Korban Pesach, which was their idol, and we had to slaughter it and even eat it in front of their eyes, so that we demonstrate we have a connection with Hashem which is direct. And we, as it were, we do something very material, like taking the sheep, slaughtering them, eating them, but we dedicate entirely to Hashem, so we break the idolatry, then Hashem, He comes and redeems us. By breaking the idolatry, he says, now I'm not allowing the plague, which is a plague generally spreads itself equally to the whole area. It's going to miss out all those houses. And then we were told, you've got to eat it in a chipazon. So, we already explained that this is the chipazon de Shechina, the chipazon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes swiftly to redeem us from disappearing from history. If we would have reigned in Egypt, we would have disappeared from history, as it's related in the Haggadah of Pesach at the beginning. When the Haggadah says, if Hashem wouldn't have redeemed us, we would remain slaves in Egypt, it doesn't mean only in Egypt, it means we would have disappeared. No one would have anymore known anything about the people of Israel, or about the way in which they reveal the existence of God. Now, you have any questions on this, please?
Question is, yeah. The Russian Jews who were redeemed, yeah. You could say, spiritually.
Yeah.
Okay, so if some of the Rabbanim would say the exact day that this happened, Gorbachev took it, but whatever, they wanted to establish a chag, a memorial. I mean, that would be halakhically permissible. I mean, only the people who were in Russia.
It's unlikely that if there would have been such a request from any leading rabbanim, they would have said privately, nothing wrong with it, but to make this part of the chagim on the level, even of the latest chagim like Hanukkah and Purim, we can't do. So we don't have enough vision today. Also not enough chokhmah amongst the chachamim to establish new chagim until the coming of the Mashiach. I mean, this question, what you're raising, is can we make memorials for unfortunate circumstances or for fortunate circumstances as part of the people of Israel, is raised in a very clear manner in the kinot for Tisha B'Av, where the Jews of Western Europe, where there was a very strong community, a Torah community in Alsace, the Bali Tosfos, the Talmidim of Rashi, they went through terrible suffering at the hands of the Crusaders, and there were frequent pogroms and so on, and the people said, surely we should make some sort of a special fast. Because we regarded the Churban, which took place here in Western Europe, for all the Bali Tosfos, many of them were murdered, there were pogroms. So we should make a special commemoration of this, just like we have a sort of a Teves and we have Tisha B'Av. Let's make another one. And the same question came up after the Holocaust. Surely there never been something like the Holocaust in history. You could say it. So it says in that period, where they regarded their destruction being similar to the destruction of the temple, although it took place many years later, and certainly the Holocaust was similarly regarded. So it says there that we can't do it anymore. Therefore we include it in Tisha B'Av. It's got to be included in the message of Tisha B'Av. The same message was brought when the question was raised amongst all the different poskim, what about making a Yom HaShoah? So the Gadolim said, we should incorporate in Tisha B'Av. It's also accepted by many politicians. It should be incorporated in Tisha B'Av. We can incorporate in Asara B'Tevet, but we're not making a new one. And until today, although some people do celebrate Yom HaShoah as a special date, but the way it was introduced was not in accordance with the greatest halachist of the day. They went and made the Yom HaShoah in Nisan. In Nisan, you don't say Tachanun. So they make a Yom HaShoah, you make... It's not part of it. You can't put it on the same level as all the days of commemoration mentioned in Megillat Tanit. Privately, you can do it. It's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with people commemorating any day in the year for their special group that have had certain suffering. But make it for the whole nation. Well, the whole nation, we follow the directives of those who still have Ruach HaKodesh, of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly. They were the ones who, as it were, they fixed the framework of halakha in many things. Now let's go back to this concept. I just want to introduce this concept of, you go now to the left-hand page in the insights of Rav Dessler. This is on the verse in Shemot chapter 12, where it says, in verse 11, let me start from there. And there it says, you should eat the Korban Pesach in the following manner: with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you should eat it in haste. because it is the Passover of Hashem, the Pesach of Hashem. For we'll pass through the land of Mitzrayim this night, and will smite all the firstborn of the land of Mitzrayim, both man and beast. I will do it, and against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgments. I am Hashem. This means the power from above, from Hashem, the supernatural power, was demonstrated on that night. And the blood shall be for you a token upon the houses where you are. When I see the blood, that means I see that you've been ready to show a spirit of sacrifice from below, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you, when I smite the land of Egypt. And this day shall be for you a memorial. You shall keep it for a feast to Hashem throughout your generations. Shall you keep it a feast by ordinance forever? 7 days you should eat unleavened bread, matzah. But on the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. Whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. And on the first day there shall be a holy gathering. The seventh day shall be a holy gathering to you. No manner of work shall be done on them, save that which every person must eat. That only may be done by you. Then it says, Ushamartem et hamatzot. You should observe the commandment of the unleavened bread. Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, because on this very day have I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt, and therefore you should observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever. So here you have the concept, Ushmartem et hamatzot. So the sages say, what does this mean? I suppose all of you know the term matzah shemura. Matzah shemura means that the matzah one eats on the first night of Pesach needs to be looked after for that particular purpose, because it has a deep symbolical significance. Observing the matzah also means that you have to make sure from the time of the initial preparation of the dough until the matzah is finally produced in its fully baked fashion, you need not to take time. It's got to be produced in a manner, in fact, within 18 minutes. So as you will have noticed, those who participate in matzah baking, you have to work very hard. It's very difficult for one person to do it all himself. That's to make teams, to make sure that the whole procedure from beginning to end is done without interruption. This is the concept of the matzah. Now the matzah, the sages say, it says, Ushmartem et hamatzot, that's how we pronounce it, but you can also read it, Ushmartem et hamitzvot. In other words, the introduction to a life dedicated to Hashem, it has to be in haste. In other words, it has to be in such a manner, a person says, I'm given time by Hashem, I have to use that time. It's a teaching that if a person really wants to grow, to become a part of the nation of Hashem, instead of time enslaving him, and he becomes a slave to time, he's got to make time a tool to reach a higher level, and not waste time. And really one of the basic principles of Torah, do not waste your life, do not waste your time. In England at least, maybe also in American, they speak about the concept, somebody asks a person, what are you doing? He says, I'm killing time. And people don't realize by killing time, they're really committing suicide, because time is life. Time isn't just money. People do know that time is money, and therefore, if you really want to get money, you'd better not waste your time. Everyone knows that. But we're not so much aware of the fact that time is actual life. So as long as Hashem gives you time in this world, you have to use it for the service of Hashem. The only way you can use it is through a certain aspect of chipazon. It's true, more haste, less speed. Therefore, you have to do it in a way that's prepared and calculated. There shouldn't be the type of haste that leads to breaking down, not being able to continue. Sometimes you jump too high, you can break your neck. Therefore, you've got to do things step by step. But don't waste your time. It's one of the first teachings. And now, you'll have to continue with later, because I also don't want to encroach upon the next year. So in our next year, we'll try to concentrate more upon the deeper significance of this verse and what it implies with regard to the mitzvah of matzah, for which we're all preparing now, and how this related to mitzvah. Today's sages use the phrase, should read Ushmaltem et ha mitzvot, shim yavo lecha, mitzvah al tach mitzena el asei lamiyad. If a mitzvah comes to your hand, don't delay it, but do it straight away. Because in life, generally, we delay. So we say, procrastination is a thief of time, as the saying goes. A person puts things off the next day, then sometimes the next day passes, and he puts it off again. And then sometimes he loses the opportunity. So therefore, we've all got to learn, one of the first things, to use all our opportunities to grow in Torah and in loving kindness and in producing from our own talents that Hashem has given us the maximum that we're able. And that way, each one of us can fulfill their task to become a member of the people of Hashem.